This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Your number is 877-217-5757. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Coming later today at 2 p.m., we'll have our monthly visit with the governor of Louisiana, the Honorable John Bel Edwards. 2 o'clock, Ask the Governor. We start today's show with Steve Bennin. He is the producer for the Rachel Maddow Show. 8.5 years he has worked with one of the top personalities in all of broadcasting, and she, of course, is the highest-rated program on MSNBC. And Steve has won 2 Emmy Awards and received nominations on 3 other occasions. And he has a book called The Imposter. Saying good morning to you, Steve Bennin.
Morning, Jim. How are you?
Doing well. Well, your book doesn't shed a very favorable light on the Republican Party right now. What's going on?
Well, it's an unflattering portrayal, I'll give you that. But my argument is this, that Republicans have traditionally been a governing party. And I think that in general, Americans have thought of both parties as governing parties. But it's time, I think, to reevaluate that assessment and reassess that assumption, because, to my mind, Republicans have become what I call a post-policy party. And by that, I mean, in recent years, it's become indifferent to the substance of policymaking and hostile towards expertise and analysis. And as a result, I think that there's an asymmetry between the parties that's causing breakdowns in our politics.
There are those who believe that Democrats are better at governing, Republicans are better at winning elections. And you can't govern unless you win in an election. So is the Republican strategy working?
To a certain degree, yes. The party has been, to my mind, operating as a post-policy party for nearly a decade. And over that period of time, they've won plenty of elections. As recently as 2016, they were, pardon me, 2017, they were in control of the House, the Senate, and the White House. And so, yes, I think that they've had some success on this front. But only insofar as we're evaluating them on their success, their ability to win elections. They've had far less success when it comes to actual policymaking and successful governing, precisely because of the reasons I've outlined in this book. The fact that they've become so hostile and indifferent to the substance of governing makes it impossible for them to really succeed once they're in office.
Are there any Republicans on Capitol Hill, maybe one I can think of, who voted for impeachment but who have not been caught up in the Trump hype?
You know, I could probably go through the ranks of every member in the House and Senate. I might be able to find a member here and there who has demonstrated an interest in an issue or two. Lamar Alexander, for example, I think has done some positive work on education policy over the years. But I think that really those are the exceptions that prove the rule. You know, on a party-wide basis, it's hard to think of a single area on any policy in our entire national landscape in which Republicans have really been willing to engage in the details. You know, I mean, governing is admittedly hard. It's time-consuming. It requires a lot of unglamorous work and attendance at committee hearings, and it's often not a lot of fun. But I think that that's their job. I think it's their responsibility to take these issues seriously and to really engage in the issues. And over the last decade or so, my argument that I make in the book is that they've simply fallen short.
The book is The Imposters, from Steve Bennin, producer for 8.5 years for Rachel Maddow, who's been on the air nightly. Our show airs, as we know, 8 o'clock Central Time here in Louisiana, and re-airs at 11 p.m. She has the top-rated show on MSNBC, and she's been on the air in that capacity for 12 years. The two of you go back away, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Rachel and I are good friends. She's very dear to me. She used to have a radio show on Air America Radio back in the day, and back in Bush-Cheney era, I used to appear regularly as a guest on her program then, and I appeared on her MSNBC show a few times, and then she brought me onto her team.
Well, one thing I think we can say, even though you have this aversion to the leadership and the performance of Republicans on Capitol Hill, the president has given people a lot of things, including yours truly, to talk about.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt about that. It is, my book probably would not exist were it not for Trump's presidency. You know, my ability to kind of just draw attention to the fact that I feel like he is responsible for post-policy politics is important to draw the attention to this and let the public know about it. He is a unique figure. You know, I recently talked to somebody about this book, and they were asking me about traditional Republican norms. You know, I do think that the crisis that I outline is unique to this era. You know, you look back at, for example, I talk a little bit in the book about Reagan-era tax reform. Now, I had a lot of problems with that package and with Reagan's presidency in general, but there was no doubt that Reagan and his team and congressional Republicans in that era took the matter seriously. They worked for months. It was a difficult, arduous process, and they were willing to do the work. But Trump is unique. This is a different kind of Republican presidency. This is not what we've traditionally thought of as the way America operates when it comes to policymaking. So, yes, I think you're right, but I think it's important to emphasize just how different Trump is to his predecessors, even within his own party.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org for Steve Bannon and our remaining time with him, the producer for The Rachel Maddow Show. And his book is The Imposters, on sale now from William Morrow. A listener, this is Hal in Monroe, listening online, asks about the Senate. Will Democrats perhaps gain the Senate? And is Mitch McConnell in any kind of trouble in Kentucky?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, there's a lot of variables between now and Election Day, and it's hard to make really firm predictions and have it with any real confidence. But I think it's fair to say that the Senate is in play. Mitch McConnell is probably a favorite to win in Kentucky this year, although he's facing some spirited challengers. Republicans right now have a 3-seat majority. I think that most election watchers would agree that there are enough seats in play, that the chamber itself is in play. And I think that may relate in some way to my thesis. You know, the point that I make in the book is that it's time for voters to decide whether or not they're comfortable with post-policy politics and whether they want a governing party in a position of authority. And so to Hal's question, I think that the odds of Democrats taking over the Senate are decent. They're probably better than 50%. But ask me again in the fall.
It was a surprising decision for some, the 6-3 decision earlier in the week on protection for gay workers in the workplace. The U.S. Supreme Court, which, of course, is dominated by conservatives, made a decision, and the majority opinion written by Neil Gorsuch, a Trump appointee. Any stunning development there? Were you surprised?
Oh, yeah. I think that anyone who was watching those cases at the Supreme Court, it would have been very hard to predict that Neil Gorsuch, of all people, would join with the more progressive justices on an issue, on a culture war issue like this, a hot-button issue that was of great national interest. I think it's causing some deep consternation on the right, where they kind of looked at Gorsuch as an automatic ally. You know, had he gone the other way, had Gorsuch voted with the conservatives, the progressive cause still would have succeeded because it was a 6-3 ruling and it would have been a 5-4 majority with John Roberts voting with the left. But Gorsuch in particular, it shook up the right considerably. I saw Josh Hawley, a senator from Missouri, yesterday questioning the entire conservative movement's effort to push the judiciary to the right, and whether or not that's been a success. This has, I think, rattled the political community in significant ways, in ways that I think that will continue to unfold in the coming weeks and months, for sure.
Dan Downtown, you're on with Steve Bannon, chief producer for Rachel Maddow. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Does the Trump presidency just fit in perfectly with an American electorate that knows more about what's going on with the Kardashians than even who their own elected officials are?
Yeah, I think that is an important point, and I'm really glad the caller raised that, because ultimately parties change when voters tell them that they have to change. You know, when a party abandons their governing responsibilities and wins elections, they have no incentive to change. Mm-hmm. They feel like they've been rewarded with more power by the electorate, and so they just stay on the same course. If the public wants to see change, they're going to have to take responsibility for that and show up in November and cast their ballots accordingly. And if they want more of the same, they can vote for that too. But I think the caller is exactly right. The power is in the hands of the electorate, which is as it should be. And we'll see how Americans vote in November.
Steve, Holly in the Garden District asks how Rachel's show evolves each day. How much preparation goes into her opening monologue and what happens thereafter?
That is a great question. We, it has always been an uphill fight to try and get these shows on the air every day. I imagine you face challenges yourself. I think that in the era of multiple crises between the coronavirus and the economy and social justice protests, it is even that much more challenging. We generally meet midday, Rachel and me and the other producers, of which I'm one of several. We get together and we talk about the ways to expand the public's understanding of what the issues that matter to us and how we can kind of frame everything together. It's about 6 to 7 hours of work every afternoon in terms of producing the show, and that's really just the hands-on work, not including the time we take before that to just keep up with all the current events. It's a lot of work, but it's hopefully a rewarding one that we all enjoy, and I hope that the people who tune in enjoy it.
Well, you obviously got the record to show that the program is a success because there are viewers, and lots of them, more than any other on MSNBC, which, of course, has had a resurgence in recent years in the Trump presidency. Steve Bannon, congratulations on the imposters, and we look forward to a return visit sometime soon. Keep going. Talk to you later. Appreciate it. Back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us. We're joined now by Senator Katrina Renee Jackson, the pride of Monroe, Louisiana, Democratic member of the Louisiana Senate, 34th District, unopposed in her race last year to succeed Frances Thompson, who was term limited. And she is a former member of the House of Representatives representing the 16th District from 2012 to 2020. That's Morehouse and Ouachita parishes. Now, Katrina Jackson is a Democrat, but she is pro-life, and she is an African-American female who is pro-life, and some might find this a bit surprising. But she not only is in favor of abortion restrictions, she has filed legislation, and it has been successful in the Louisiana House and Senate, signed by the governor, challenged in the courts, and is now before the United States Supreme Court, a major decision on admitting privileges. The decision could come down, it could come down today, but it is expected to come down within the next few weeks at the latest, and the nation is watching as the court weighs June Medical Services versus Russo. And good morning to you, Senator Jackson.
Good morning. Things are so good for you to have me on.
Well, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. Tell us about your passion for this issue and why you believe that this is something that is important to the people of our state and the country.
Well, can I first start by saying this? You know, when people introduce me, and they often do this, and you just did it, you said she's a Democrat, but I want to let people know that there are a lot of pro-life Democrats in the state of Louisiana, and a lot of us are elected. More than a majority of Democrats in the state House and Senate are pro-life in Louisiana, and so it's not an anomaly here. So I just wanted to start off with that because our governor is pro-life, and I served under as a staffer Senator Barrow and now Mayor Broome, who are both pro-life Black female Democrats. So I just always like to, you know, clear that up. It's not a but in Louisiana. Now, if you get out of Louisiana, it may be a but not here.
Well, it's in the Democratic Party platform that the party believes in abortion rights. But I understand what you're saying. Louisiana is a different state. This was not an unpopular bill in the state. You're right. The governor, who we'll hear from at 2 o'clock today, he signed this bill willingly. And you're in the majority. But the court has to rule on whether this is a good thing, and it's a question that comes down to the legality. Is it appropriate to have admitting privileges for doctors to perform abortions? You obviously think so. Why?
Yes, it is, and this is not a somewhat of a pro-life piece of legislation. It's more of a women's health piece of legislation. In Louisiana, the legislature years ago, before I ever thought about running, required admitting privileges for surgical centers. And so that means that if you go in to have a mole removed in a surgical center, that doctor has to have admitting privileges. They truly believed at the time that they had included abortion facilities, but not realizing that abortion facilities was in another structure of law, in another chapter of the law, and they didn't make reference to it. And so when I went back to do this, it was because I didn't want women who would have abortions or like to have abortions to have less of a standard of health care than everyone else in the state of Louisiana. And that's why Louisiana is so unique. That's why the Fifth Circuit, who also heard the Texas law, upheld Louisiana's law and not Texas law, because our state had this in place for years for other centers. and we just extended it rightfully so to abortion facilities as well. So if a man chooses to have a vasectomy in the state of Louisiana, right, that physician has to have admitting privileges.
Okay. 877-217-5757 for Senator Katrina Jackson, the author of Louisiana's bill, which is before the U.S. Supreme Court, requiring admitting privileges at hospitals for doctors who perform abortions. And if you'd like to send an email, talk@talklouisiana.org. There are those who say, Senator, that the goal of this is to shut down clinics, and by virtue of this bill passing, that most, if not all, clinics in Louisiana would shut down because these doctors don't have admitting privileges. Is that a goal beyond the intricacies of the law?
No, I'm very intentional with every bill that I pass. Now, I do have a bill that's actually going to be on the ballot during the presidential election. That's a constitutional amendment that says Louisiana doesn't recognize the right to abortion in its constitution nor government-funded abortion. That's the goal of that, to make sure that Louisiana constitutions never recognize the right to abortion. But in this, it was very simple. Abortion is legal in the United States right now based on Roe versus Wade. But I think people get really confused about what Roe versus Wade says. It doesn't say that abortion is legal and you can't enact any restrictions or any health care regulations around it. And so sometimes when people see us legislating in this area, they believe the whole goal of the bill is to shut down abortion clinics. For example, there are 3 abortion clinics in the state of Louisiana, 1 in Shreveport, 1 in Monroe, and 1 in New Orleans. Before this bill was passed, the doctor in Shreveport had admitting privileges. The physicians in both Baton Rouge and New Orleans never applied for admitting privileges. Since this case has been going forth, 2 of physicians in one of the other clinics have applied for admitting privileges and received them. And so that was really alarming to me as well, that they just never applied for admitting privileges. And I want to be really clear about this. Admitting privileges is simply this. If you're at a clinic having a procedure, having an abortion, it distinguishes between a physician that can call the hospital, let them know what happened during the procedure, let them know what they think happened or went wrong, and can better assess your treatment before you arrive at the emergency room. That's the difference, because a physician without admitting privileges, what we've seen is that when a woman hemorrhages during a procedure, that physician calls 911 or puts her in an ambulance, and the woman is rushed to the hospital, and that physician has no contact with the hospital before the female arrives. And that's the issue. It's the continuity of care and the ability to have quick care in a situation like that.
In an ideal world, Senator Jackson, would you think that it would be a better country if we did not have abortion clinics at all?
Yes. I've been very clear on that.
So your position is that you don't like abortion in any way, shape, or form, but this is something that you believe is just sound law, and the Supreme Court will rule. Is there any indication, based on what was reviewed when the High Court took this under consideration, how the court will rule?
No, I can tell you the questions were all over the place. I attended the hearing. I don't think anyone left with a firm grasp or even a direction in where the court was going.
877-217-5757 for Senator Jackson, who will be with us a bit longer. She, of course, is busy at the Capitol. There is a special session ongoing, and we will get her take on that as well. And as mentioned, there is going to be an amendment on the November 3rd ballot pertaining to abortion, and you are intimately involved in that.
Yes, I am. And this is the issue. In a couple of other states already, their Supreme Courts in their states have recognized not only a right to abortion, but a right to a government-funded abortion, which means in one state, the court has recognized that taxpayer money should go to fund abortions, like kind of like Medicaid does, you know, funds health care, right? And so what that legislation says and what that constitutional amendment says is that, number one, we don't recognize the right to abortion in our constitution nor government-funded abortion. And I think that takes it a step further for our constituents to ensure that no court can mandate that this state pays for anyone's abortion.
Katrina Jackson is a lawmaker now serving in her third term, two terms in the House, now one in the Louisiana Senate. On many other issues, you're at odds with the conservative majority, but on this one, I would imagine they're working closely with you.
They are, yes. We are working very closely together, and we've been in prayer about this. And like you said, on some other issues, I don't agree on some things that I guess I don't classify myself as conservative or liberal. I classify myself as a person who represents now District 34 and represents the interests of a majority of its constituents.
We're going to take a short break for the news, and then we'll hear more from Senator Katrina Renee Jackson, Democrat from the great hamlet of Monroe. 877-217-5757 is your number. Talk at talklouisiana.org is our email. We have some listeners who are chiming in about Senator Jackson and the case before the Supreme Court regarding Louisiana's abortion law. Now the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle producing. Two of us will be back today at 2 with the governor, so hope you'll tune in at 2 p.m. for Ask the Governor. But right now, a few more minutes with Senator Katrina Jackson, Democrat from Monroe, who's the author of a bill requiring admitting privileges for doctors at hospitals who perform abortions, and it's before the Supreme Court June. Medical Services versus Russo is the case. The court could rule any time. 877-217-5757 for Senator Jackson. Nick in Mid-City. Hi, Nick.
Hey, my question is kind of twofold for the senator. Part one is, does she know how difficult it is for providers to get admitting privileges? And the second part, is it really fair to legislate for something to restrict a service based on an opinion on something like abortion when the sex education in Louisiana is not really taught in schools and it's abstinence focused? Should we maybe do something about that as well?
All right. Well, let's go one at a time. He says, is it fair? Obviously, you believe so. You filed the bill, but I don't want to put words in your mouth. And you said the goal was not to shut down clinics, but just to have safer and equal responsibilities for doctors who perform abortions as they do other services. But please continue on this. And also, what about sex education and abstinence? Should we have more sex education in our schools?
Sure. I can answer both.
Okay, you're fading on us just a bit, Senator. If we can get you to a better spot, we'll do our best, because we want folks to hear from Senator Katrina Renee Jackson, and Matt says she's good now. Now,
bring
go ahead. There you go. We're in good
okay.
shape.
Okay. So, yes, I do think it's fair, and I know a lot of the public is hearing a lot of propaganda about how difficult it is for physicians to get admitted privileges. In my explanation, I stated that only one had tried and received admitting privileges after this legislation was filed. Two received admitting privileges when they applied. And so it's not as difficult as physicians who perform abortions would like you to think. And so that was a misnomer that was out there about that. And I also think it's fair as a female. And after hearing countless testimony of other females who went to physicians who didn't have admitting privileges, and when complications happened, they lost their ability to have kids for the rest of their lives from one decision. I think we also should note in the state of Louisiana that admitting privileges is really important because we have radiologists performing abortions. Most people believe that they're only OBGYNs performing abortions, but we've had eye doctors performing abortions in Louisiana, as well as radiologists. And lastly, I know people like to put us in a box, and some people that are pro-life don't believe in a holistic approach. I have voted for many of their bills in the last 8 years to increase sex education in the school system, and I will continue to. Okay. I watch them very closely. Sometimes I amend them. But I have been somewhat of an advocate for sex education as well.
Do you think we'll be fighting over abortion all these years later? I remember 1990, we had a showdown at the legislature over abortion rights. That's 30 years ago. Are we going to keep doing this?
I think every state is going to keep doing this. If you look around the nation, you have some states that fight for stronger abortion rights like New York, now you can have an abortion up to the time that you have a woman has contractions, all the way up to the 9th month, at the end of the 9th month before you give birth. And so I don't think Louisiana is an anomaly on that. I believe that the abortion debate has been around since, you know, before Roe versus Wade, and it will continue, and it's just not in Louisiana.
Now, there are other issues, of course, and a listener asked about the Supreme Court decision of a few days ago and relates it to Governor Edwards' executive order a few years ago to provide workplace fairness to those who work in state government or for companies that benefit from state business. This means you can't fire people because they're homosexual. The court said the governor is right, but Jeff Landry has been fighting this in the courts. Your thoughts about what the Supreme Court did 2 days ago?
I have not fully looked at the opinion, so I'm going to speak from a limited scope. My concern, and it may not be a concern not that I look at the opinion, is whether it will exclude from that religious organizations who, like my church, believes that homosexuality is a sin, and whether those churches and religious organizations who are founded under those principles will have to abide by the Supreme Court decision. I haven't looked at the opinion closely enough to determine that. So my understanding of Jeff's stance on this, Attorney General Landry, I apologize, stance, we went to law school together, stance on this is that that's going to be some of the issues, whether, and we'll have to see in further litigation, whether churches and other religious organizations are going to have to abide by the Supreme Court decision. I am very honest, and maybe to a fault, I believe that homosexuality is a sin, but I believe that just like God did, you hate the sin and not the sinner. I'm a sinner in so many ways and have been and still trying to get life right. And so I don't condemn anyone because of their sin. I just believe God, just like me, that he saved me and he continues to save. And even since I've been saved, I've committed sin and I still pray for his ultimate forgiveness, and that he will right my wrongs and lead me in the right direction.
And you and Jeff Landry went to the Southern University Law Center together?
Yes, I think Jeff was a year older than me, yes. A year as far as time, because he's a little bit older than me, but he was a year ahead of me.
877-217-5757. Mike in Villa Del Rey, you're on with Senator Katrina Jackson. Hi, Mike.
Senator. I heard you say that this battle with abortion is going to go on and on. And I just kind of really, I don't understand why, because right now they have, you can buy abortion pills on the internet and you take them home and just pop a pill. I don't see this battle of abortion going too many years. I'll listen for your comment.
All right.
Yes. Right now in the state of Louisiana, if someone is buying a pill off the an abortion pill off the internet, it's illegal. In the state of Louisiana, it has to be administered and prescribed by a physician. So I'm not really clear that somewhere in the state of Louisiana someone can buy a pill off the internet. In other states, I hear you can, but not in the state of Louisiana.
What if they were prescribed the pill in a state where it is legal, like California, and then came to Louisiana and popped a pill? I'm not being facetious. Would that still be illegal?
Oh, I understand. It. My understanding is, and it depends on that state laws, because my understanding in the state of Louisiana, when you're prescribed that pill, you have a certain amount of time to take it. And so it would just depend on that state laws. As far as the state of Louisiana, I think you bring up a good point, is why we do it under the prescription of a physician, is because you come somewhere or you are 3 hours away once you get it, which happens in Louisiana. We've had testimony. You start having complications. So what we did in Louisiana was we did the abortion facilities must have a 24-hour hotline when they administer that pill. So if a woman begins to have complications, she has the option of calling 911, which some women will not do because some are ashamed that they've had the abortion and don't want to go in and have to tell that, you know, that to the emergency room staff in their area. So we set up and required in law for those physicians administering that pill to have a 24-hour hotline to help that woman in her time of need.
All
and
right.
See, these are the things that people consider to be unfair abortion regulations, but it really protects the woman. We've had instances where a woman has gone to New Orleans for an abortion, received the abortion pill, drove 2 hours back to her small hometown and took it and had complications and was too embarrassed to go into her local facility because the whole town would know she had an abortion. So by the time she actually attended to her medical needs, she lost the ability to have kids for life. I've always said this as a female. We all make bad decisions. Sometimes our decisions that we think are right for us at the time, but we think that those are temporary decisions because the abortion providers and physicians in the industry that make so much money tell the female, you can have an abortion and normal. But for that woman who has complications that can never have a child again, without our safety net laws, like the 24-hour hotline for the woman to call back into the abortion facility, that woman would have had very little options.
Karen in Old Jefferson. Karen, good morning. You're on with Senator Katrina Jackson, Democrat from Monroe.
Good morning. I wanted to ask the senator about other freestanding surgical clinics like cosmetic clinics or dental surgeons, endodontists, and people who do dental surgery, and even the LASIK eye centers. Are those doctors required to have admitting privileges?
Yes, they do. I spoke earlier about the ambulatory surgical center law. When you perform certain surgeries in the state of Louisiana, like laser surgeries for your eyes and things like that, you are classified as an ambulatory surgical center. And for years, they've had to have admitting privileges.
Jay in Mid-City. Hi, Jay. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. Ma'am, there are so many Planned Parenthood in the black community. I mean, it's ridiculous. And I think maybe you should focus your energy on helping poor people that to have the child and get funding for them and better access to health care.
All right. What about tending for children who are born as a priority? I think he says that's a greater priority than stopping abortions. But your thoughts, Senator?
I mean, you know this. If you follow my career, I have advocated for Medicaid expansion. And again, I think people, when they hear you pro-life, put you in a box. I am one of the strongest advocates for indigent families, for those who need access to health care, and for those who need access to social programs to ensure that they can feed their children, clothe their children. And so I agree with him that it goes hand in hand. I want to preference it with this. I'm a whole-life Democrat, which means I care for life from the time of inception to the time of death.
All right, we're going to spend a few more minutes with Senator Katrina Jackson, 877-217-5757, your number. Back in a couple minutes with more Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with Senator Katrina Jackson, Democrat from West Monroe, the author of a restrictive abortion bill that requires admitting privileges for doctors at hospitals in order to perform abortions in our state. It's before the U.S. Supreme Court. It could be a landmark decision. June Medical Services versus Russo. The court expected to rule any day, and it could happen as soon as today or tomorrow. Mike in Shenandoah. Mike, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Jim. Thank you. And Senator Jackson, I'm calling. I'm a pro-life OBGYN who's currently retired, but I feel strongly that you're completely correct. Several years ago, there was a practitioner who was retired, I think, but still an OBGYN, who used to perform abortions in Baton Rouge. He never had hospital privileges. I was on call one night, and I got a call in the middle of the night for a patient who had an abortion done. I don't remember. It's been years ago. Either earlier that day or the day before. She went to the ER because she was hemorrhaging, in shock, and I was the only person to call. So I got a patient that's not mine. Not only is she bleeding and shocky, but the abortion was completely botched. The fetus was still in there.
All right. Would you respond, Senator Jackson, to this graphic story told by Mike?
Mike, we've had this testimony so many times. And that's why I felt extremely compelled to put the same standards on abortion providers as we do on other surgical centers, is because so many women were showing up to emergency rooms hemorrhaging from botched abortions in the state of Louisiana, and there was no follow-up care. And so the OBGYN that were receiving them, who were on call, had no explanation of what happened, couldn't talk to the physician because the physician performing the abortion didn't have admitting privileges and thereby didn't have a relationship with the local hospital.
Jamie and Clinton, please be brief. You're on the air with Senator Jackson. Jamie.
Wow. Thank you. Good morning, Senator Katrina. I was just calling to ask, to the best of your knowledge, how many innocent children were murdered by abortion in Louisiana last year?
All right. To how many abortions were performed last year in Louisiana?
Oh, Mike, I usually have those statistics with me, but I don't. I know we saw a decrease as we expanded Medicaid expansion, so I don't have the new numbers. As an African-American woman, what I can tell you that stays on my mind is that more African-American babies die in the womb in Louisiana and all over the nation than from any other sickness, illness, murder, death combined. But I do know that we dropped a little bit as we expanded Medicaid, which was one of those things, but we didn't drop significantly. And I don't want to give you a false number, and my computer is down for other reasons that I'm waiting on some things to come through, but I know there's still an alarming rate of babies that die innocently in the womb in Louisiana and across the nation.
You do view it as a murder?
I do. I don't think it's a choice. I don't think it's a choice. It is the life of another person. And let me tell you why Louisiana law views it as a murder. If a woman is pregnant and someone kills her, and the unborn child dies, they're charged with the double homicide.
All right.
So they're,
8,144 reported abortions in Louisiana in 2019. James in Metairie. James, you're on with Senator Jackson. Hi, James.
Well, thank you very much, Jim. You know, your guest was talking about this draconian law in Louisiana where women, the details I'm not fully aware of, are prohibited from using these abortion pills through the mail or what have you. The Griswold versus Connecticut case said that the Supreme Court said that married couples, can use contraceptives, which many people on the far right, some of them they believe are, murderous medications. It's crazy. Somebody needs to go after that law that she was discussing, Jim. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, James. Senator, would you respond to James? We're going to have to pull her up, Matt. Senator Jackson, what about James and Metairie? He was all fired up, and certainly he is reflective of many people who are in favor of abortion rights. Senator?
Right, but I've never been a legislator that was not in favor of contraceptives. I don't fight contraceptives. I think that's a personal choice in the bedroom. I actually encourage them, if you're not ready to have a child.
All right. Tracy at the Capitol says, in 2016, did you vote for pro-lifer Donald Trump or pro-choicer Hillary Clinton?
Oh, I'm very, very, very clear on this. I did not vote for Donald Trump. I was a delegate for Hillary Clinton because I'm a whole life Democrat, which means I care for life from exception to death. And so I don't believe in just asking a woman not to have an abortion and leaving her after she chooses to have the child. I believe in social programs and other things to give our hand up and not a handout so that she can take care of that child. So I have to weigh everything. Now I'm kind of locked in this election. In the new presidential election, I hadn't made an endorsement. Don't think I will.
So you're not decided between Biden and Trump?
I'm definitely not a Trump person. I'm looking at a third-party candidate. Don't know where I will fall. But because I believe President Trump does not offer answers and remedies for women who choose life, and he doesn't promote the choice of life because after the woman has the child based on his policies that he pushes, it doesn't really tell a woman to choose life. It says that, yeah, choose life, but you're not going to be able to take care of your child afterwards if you're in a bad position now. Again, I'm generally not painted in a box. And so when someone asks me a Trump question, it's almost hilarious that says just because Trump says, hey, don't have an abortion, it means he's pro-life. I don't believe people who ask you not to have an abortion without any other regulations or any other aid is truly pro-life. They're
All right, we do have to roll, Senator, but thank you so much for your time today, and we look forward to talking with you when the decision comes. Senator Katrina Jackson, who's gracious to spend most of the hour with us today on a topic that she knew fully well is a hot-button topic with passionate people on every side. David Alberton rounds out the hour. He is an accomplished gentleman who's been around in the world of journalism for some time, born in South Africa, immigrated to Canada with his family when he was 10, and since 2005, he's also been a competitive tennis player and coach, and he has his first novel, Undercard, which is getting exceptional reviews. And good morning to you, David.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Well, tell us about Undercard. It's a psychological thriller with boxing and a whole bunch of other things mixed in. And what a vivid imagination you have displayed in your first novel.
Well, thanks very much. Yeah, it's as you said, there's a lot in it, and it's basically 24 hours in Las Vegas, and it's sort of boxing, casinos, corrupt cops, revenge, and old friends thrust back together. It's kind of the overall kind of look at it.
One of the reviews says, a quirky, weird, and definitely funny novel, which contains gravity and emotional depth. It's something that obviously you took a lot of time. You know, your first novel is often somewhat biographical. Could that be said about this one?
Well, in some respects, I'd say superficially it's quite different from my life, but I would say it follows four main characters who are all in their early 30s, and they were estranged childhood friends, and now they're all back in their hometown on the same day, sort of all their lives colliding. It's just one 24-hour span. And I guess, and the question they're asking themselves is sort of, how do I navigate my responsibilities to, like, myself, my family, my community, and my friends, when those responsibilities conflict. So I guess in that way, it's things I've thought about a lot, but the characters themselves are quite different from me.
It's about a murder in Las Vegas. They're on the strip during a tumultuous 24-hour period. Four adults who've been friends since childhood have become embroiled in it. And it is certainly, with the backdrop of professional boxing, it's apparent that you have an affinity for boxing, don't you?
Yes, yes. So one of the things when you write, you know, people, they always say, write what you know. You know? So I knew I was going to deal with a lot of the thing, sort of issues and various things in this book. So I wanted to include sports just because I do have expertise. I was a tennis coach. And or still am, I suppose, technically. And so a lot of sports background in various sports. But then boxing, I've been a fan of for a long time, and also done some boxing cross training. So as soon as I decided to set in Vegas, I knew that would be the featured sport, and that's how that came about.
It's an old axiom that what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. It is a city like no other.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I definitely felt like Vegas kind of met a lot of the kind of demands. There were a number of things I wanted to do with the story, and kind of Vegas, I felt like, was the only place that kind of fit all that. And then also, I'd say the surrounding landscape being so kind of just sort of majestic and grand, the sort of desert and mountains and things, it was an added element that made it sort of a desirable location for this story.
Do you have any mentors, any icons in the literature world that you have tried to emulate?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, as a kid, I was all into Michael Crichton and Tolkien. That was like, I loved Tolkien so much, and like these sort of adventure stories. And then I'd say Crichton, how he kind of, he blended sort of thriller with sort of science fiction. And whereas I feel like, I think that was a big influence where I kind of want to blend sort of thriller with kind of like sort of substantive issues, sort of contemporary issues as well. And so I think that was a big inspiration, and just how he often uses time and things like that for added suspense. So that was a big, big influence. And then a bunch of others subsequently, I suppose.
The book is Undercard from David Alberton. Remember the name. Signature support comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Back today at 2 with Ask the Governor. Stay tuned.